I am fantasy author L. Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes at an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, March 30th, 2019, and this is episode 7 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this week, a little bit more of a quiet week. I had come off back-to-back projects at work, which were rush projects, for several months, in addition to writing deadlines, which had made things pretty difficult. So this week, I had launched the rush project at the end of last week, and this week was quieter, and I kind of crashed a little bit. I wasn't super good at responding to people, because sometimes after, you know, this frenzy of activity, I just kind of had to take a break. Not a break. I mean, I'm still working every day, but at a different pace because things just needed to be a little quieter. So that was a relief. But this week's best thing is I saw on my doorstep a package and my arcs came for Whispers of Shadow and Flame. So this is book 2 in the series. If you're not watching on YouTube, if you're on the audio, I am holding it up. So if you want to check out the video on YouTube, but it's thick. It's the size is smaller than the hardcovers for book 1 for Song of Blood and Stone, and it's a lot longer. But the covers are pretty. I did the cover reveal a little while ago, and the new covers, I'm really excited about them. I mean, I loved the old covers and I loved the original cover artist, and I think that they were just great. But these are also amazing. And you can't see in the ARC version, but the full paperback is going to have a full spread, which I'm not sure I've seen the final one yet. So yeah, the whole outside is going to be even more, you know, the whole image spreads across the whole outside of the paperback, and it's going to be great. But I will be doing art giveaways of the book. And if you don't know, ARC is Advanced Reader Copy. So this book comes out October 1st, and I'll be doing art giveaways on Instagram and Facebook and my newsletter. So check me out one or all of those places for a chance to win in the coming months. I haven't gotten myself together to do a giveaway yet, but I will probably do one in the next couple of weeks, do the first one, because I have several to give away and I'm really excited. I am currently still working on, and this reminds me how behind I am, on the past pages, which are the proof pages for this. So they print up the ARCs before all of the proofreading has been done. And that's why they always say not for quotation, because I'm going through and making little changes. I never have made big arc changes. I mean, big changes to the book. Never. Like, this is book 2 series. So, anyway, I am still looking at the proof pages and making corrections. And so that is due soon. And I need to really get on top of that again. But yeah, it's very exciting to have the ARCs in the house and to see them in print and with the new map and, you know, all of the every chapter has an illustration at the top, and it's great. It's a lot of fun. So in writing news, I am still working on book 3, Cry of Metal and Bone, of course, and it's been going just strangely. Just this whole process is just different than when I was working on the first 2 books. But it's, you know, I'm pushing along. I had given the first 40,000 words to my agent, Sarah, just as a sanity check, because it's the most, you know, there's a lot going on. And there's not that many people at this point who have read all of the new version of Song of Blood and Stone and Whispers. And so then can give me feedback on book 3. And the timeline is such that I don't want too much feedback. Like, I just want, is this okay? And if it's not, yeah, please tell me. But she gave me great feedback. Just, you know, it was working for her. And at this point, that's enough for me. Like, I would love to do another deep dive and just really make everything, tweak everything and make it the best it can be. But when you're under deadlines, like the good thing about the deadlines for me is that, you know, I need something to work towards. I need an external motivating factor. And the bad thing is that if I had infinite time, you know, you could make it infinitely good, which is never reality, you know, like the more you touch it, yeah, I can improve certain things. I think everything can be improved, but you have to know when to stop. And then the deadline is when I know when I stop. You know, I think when you are a new writer or you're unpublished or you're not contracted for something, it's hard to know when the book is done. Like, I see people asking this question a lot, like, how do you know when you're done with the book? And I mean, you're never done, really, but you have to be done at a certain point. You have to ship. So in the past, it's been, I get to the point where I feel good with it. I give it to someone else and they give me feedback. I do the feedback. I give it to someone else to review and they may have more feedback, but usually 2 rounds of feedback, it should be done unless you're getting like crazy, you know, this still makes no sense, which hasn't been my experience because I do so many drafts before anyone sees it. But that doesn't mean that I don't get, you know, good substantive feedback and things that could be changed. When I do have the time to really go through a real beta cycle and a real review cycle. So now, you know, at this point, it's kind of just about trusting myself. And like I talked about before, intuition, because I don't have the luxury of the extended beta review cycle where I have, you know, 5 people read the whole thing and give me notes on it. And then I can, you know, go and make the changes. And it's scary, but it is what it is. So I know when I feel good about it, at least, I can rely on that. Like it's not going to be perfect. Nothing is perfect, but I'm proud of it, you know? And when I turn it into my editor, as long as I'm proud of it, then it's cool. So yeah, the writing is going, it's still slower than I wanted it to be. I'm still reworking the plot as I go along, which I, at this point, I don't usually do. So yeah, this book is just a little different. Other news, it is time for quarterly planning. So at the end of 2018, I took this class and I did the quarterly planning for the first quarter. And so, you know, the second quarter starts April 1st and I'm trying to list out my goals for the quarter, and then break those down into projects and break the projects down into tasks so that I can then schedule them and just feel on top of my schedule and being able to hopefully, you know, hit as many goals as possible. Now, there are certain goals from first quarter that I missed completely and didn't even start. And I was, even though I was trying really hard to be realistic and look at the time and all of that stuff, I still bit off more than I can chew or thought I was going to bite off more than I could. I didn't end up doing that because I never got to that bite. It just didn't happen. So now I'm reevaluating and trying to do it by Monday. Hopefully I can finish it this weekend. So the first part is to look back at the quarter, look back at what you did and didn't get done, and then figure out, okay, the things that I didn't get done, should I move them over or are they just not as important? Should I just kind of let them go? And there's always unexpected things that happen. So as much as I tried to plan, you know, some of the things didn't get done because I had unexpected, you know, other projects that took priority. And that's to be expected. The point of planning isn't to be rigid. It's just to be sane, in my opinion. So yeah, the quarterly planning is happening. And so right now the goals, finish Cry, of course, because it's due May 1st, then move into book 4. And I don't know that I've announced the title of book 4 ever publicly. So I won't do it now until I figure out if I have done it before. It might be somewhere, but I don't know. Anyway, book 4 will be taking up the second half of the year because it is the only book that has never been written before. And I think there was a point I was trying to make in my last podcast that I forgot in the middle of talking, which was that that book 4 has never been written. I have pages of notes. I've got all kinds of ideas, but there's no draft yet. And so that is due at the beginning of next year, but it will take me, you know, all the time I have allotted to write it, because it's the end of the series, you know, it's the culmination of all these threads. Because all these, yeah, I do. It is the end of the series. And, you know, you always want the end to be satisfying. And part of me has been afraid to even think about book four. Like I said, the first three were ready for self-publishing. And when I got the deal with St. Martin's Press. And so that whole time I was like, well, I knew there were going to be edits. And so I wasn't going to think about book four until I got all the edits, and I knew there were going to be changes. And as that process has kind of been a little extended, I still was very resistant about thinking about book four, because I hadn't, you know, until now I hadn't been working on book three. And three and four go right into each other, you know, the stories just link. Whereas books one and two are parallel. Yeah, three and four go right together. And so it's still scary and it's kind of looming. And I have to break the hold of the fear that is on me with this book, because I know what has to happen. I know where everything ends. I've always known where it ends. I know the steps to get there, mostly, as you see the confidence that I have about that. But I've just been very reticent to give a lot of mental energy to it. Now, over the past 6 months, I have, like I said, I do have notes. Like I have thought about it in spurts. And when I was, you know, starting the revision for book three, I was like, well, I'll plot them all at the same time and I'll just plot it all out. And that didn't work because book three has changed. Or, you know, this storyline of book three has changed. The rest of book three has always been the same. So it's, there's still like resistance, you know, and that's going to have to get conquered soon. As excited as I am by it, I am also still afraid about it, you know? So hopefully that's normal. I mean, to be afraid of your own book, I don't know. I know I'll figure it out. I always do. I have to. It's not an option not to. And then there's still the novellas and two more novellas coming in between books two and three and three and four. And one of those is written and one of those is not. So lots of writing to do. And also just looking forward to getting to work on other things also. As much as I love this world, and I do have ideas about revisiting the world, I have at least 5 or 6 or more other manuscripts that I would like to get to, that I would like to have time to get to. And one day it will happen. You know, doing the future planning. Sometimes I can work on two books at once. It really depends on so many factors, work and energy and just all kinds of things. And when the book is giving me as much trouble as this one is, I can't split my focus. So all the other projects that I want to work on, I'll just have to wait a little longer until I can give them energy. So this week, in addition to planning, there's also been a lot of drama about the Rita Awards, which I don't really want to go into, but I do. If you're not aware, the Rita Awards are the awards from the Romance Writers of America. They're the highest romance writing award. And I'm a member of RWA. I have been for quite a few years. And for a long time, I never paid any attention to the Ritas. Like, I'm not super interested in awards. But then when the whole last year, with last year's awards, Piper Hughley kind of brought out, and I don't know, I know that she was the one, I remember saying it first, that no Black author has ever won a Rita Award in however many years, decades, 25 years, 30 years, something like that. And so there was a, you know, an uproar about that. And so then this year I decided to enter a book because of that. Like, I had never paid attention to these awards before, but that seemed like a good reason to enter. When you enter, you have to judge. And so this year again, so the the outcry was that once again, there was a disproportionately low number of authors of color, period. Three authors of color, two Black authors who were finalists in the award across 78, I think, finalists. And it's obviously a huge problem. And so things have devolved in terms of the discussion about this issue and how to address it and if it is an issue. And my feeling is that I don't have time for drama. And I don't think that this is important enough to lend like the very little bit of extra time and energy I have to. And I'm not saying that the award isn't important to the people. On some level, it is. It is an award for our organization, for a genre that I love and that I read and that I am involved in. But at the same time, someone, I think it was Presley Sepp, had a quote from Toni Morrison about, you know, the job of racism is to take us away from our work or something like that. And, of the many jobs of racism. And that's true. Like, so there were calls for Black authors to go onto this forum where a lot of hatred and just ridiculousness was being spewed by white authors and to lend our voices. And I think that if that is your calling, then I support you. I don't argue with white people on the internet. Like that is not a thing that I feel like is beneficial to me or to them or to the world. There are a lot of ways that I feel like I can help the world and that I can, and then I feel like I can do my part to address societal ills. I do it in my work. I do it in my books. And so for me, and in my opinion, trying to convince racist people not to be racist is a waste of time. And I don't think it's a good use of my energy. And so that's why I choose not to run into these forums and to spend a lot of time combating this. There is a very valid other point of view that you have to shout it down, that you have to oppose it vocally, and that not doing so is some kind of, I don't think that not doing so is a tacit approval in any way for the reasons I've just stated, but I cannot discount the people who feel like they need to, you know, be very vocal and shout it down. That's a perfectly valid viewpoint. But are you changing anyone's mind, really? I don't know. I think that there are ways to change people's minds. And I think that we do see people who didn't realize that they only read books with white characters or by white authors. And once it's brought to their attention, they're like, huh, I never thought about that. Let me take a look at some of these other authors. And those are the ways that we change this phenomena. But screaming at people online has just never been my style or something that I don't think I'm good at it if I were to engage like that. And I don't think it helps. You know, I would rather have a conversation and share viewpoints in a non-antagonistic way, which is very difficult to do online. And so, yeah, I said I wasn't going to talk about it, but of course I talked about it. And the notion that we, as Black authors, need to somehow convince white people that we're human or that we're worthy in some way, I don't want to spend my time doing that. Like, I understand the value of trying to change hearts and minds, but I just think there's got to be other ways of doing it and doing it in the work that you produce and put into the world and doing it in the way that you are and the way that you carry yourself and all of that seems to be more powerful. And so I think everybody just has to walk their road, you know, do what they feel is best for them and what they feel in their heart is the right thing to do. And I'm not here to criticize anybody, but I do see people criticizing like, oh, you can't stay quiet. Well, you can stay quiet if you are working in other ways, because being loud doesn't always solve a problem. And in terms of fixing an award, we know when the issue is that it's judged by your peers, and if your peers don't feel that they can connect with Black characters or LGBT characters or any other kind of marginalized character, and they're not, either not interested in reading it, or when they are forced to read it, they can't connect. Yeah, I think it's a problem, but it's a problem without a clear solution. How, I don't know. I don't have a solution for changing these awards. And I think the solution is just to look to keep moving and do something else and understand that these awards don't make and break careers, really. Most romance readers have never heard of it. And it doesn't make a big impact in my life. And so there are other things that can potentially make an impact in my life and my career. And I'm going to focus on those. And the readers can go on in whatever way they choose to go on. So that's my perspective. After a week of dipping my toe into paying attention to it because it's important, and then needing to focus back on the things that pay the bills and the things that feed me creatively and that aren't toxic. So I do. I wanted to give a shout out to Robin Covington. I had my first rating and review for the podcast, which was very awesome. So thank you so much, Robin. She's a fantastic author, romance author. So definitely check her out. I will put a link to her site in the show notes. And if you'd like to leave a rating or review, I would super appreciate it. I started this podcast knowing it would be fairly niche. We should have like a poll. How should you say that? A fairly niche podcast. And in the first episode, I talked about my influences and, you know, some of the other podcasts that were examples for me that I modeled mine on a little bit. But the other part of it was that I wanted sort of a record of kind of where I was at. A weekly record of where I was at in this writing thing. I have a really bad memory, and having some sort of external record was important. The other thing, the reason I started it, was this was several years ago, and I'm trying to remember who it was. I don't know. Some authors will do sort of extended author's notes in the back of their books, and covering different topics, what they were thinking about when they wrote it, just all kinds of things. And at one point, I was considering doing that. So it was actually the first time I was writing Whispers was I started keeping a sort of a log. Like after every writing session, I would just write down notes about how I felt about it. And just for myself, so I would know what was going on. Maybe I could turn that into some sort of author's note. And there was an author's note, I think, in the back of the original self-published version. And then I got tired of writing after I was writing, like I do so much writing. So I wanted to do it more, I wanted to do a video version. So I was looking, I didn't want to put on YouTube. It was private. It wasn't going to be for public consumption. So I was looking for like a private video blogging service. And I found MindLogger. And MindLogger.com, it's MindLogr.com. Which is exactly what I was looking for. So I think there's a free version, and the paid version is like a very nominal fee. And I subscribe to it, and I can record up to 5 minutes of video, and it's just saved somewhere in an archive, and it's like a private video diary. And so I've been using that for a couple of years, just once or twice, once a week maybe, a couple times a month after either particularly grueling writing sessions when I just need to vent, and, you know, when good things happen too. A lot of it is bitching and moaning about just writing insecurities and things, but it serves as a log of where I'm at and in my process. And so that I can go back and look at where I was last year and, you know, understand that all of this trouble and all of the things that I go through are normal for me. And so it's been a good record. And I thought about like maybe one day doing some kind of Patreon or something and giving people access to it. I don't know. I don't know if anyone would be interested. But that thought crossed my mind. But it's a much deeper dive of just the personal strife of the writing life. So that is sort of more of the genesis of why I wanted to do this. And it was never going to, it was never going to appeal to the masses, and that was not the point of it. It was kind of to give either people who are readers, you know, a look behind the scenes and other authors, just experiences that I've had. So that is all that I have this week. I hope that you have a great week and I will talk to you soon. Happy reading. For episode show notes and to learn more about me and my books, go to lpenelope.com. Subscribe to My Imaginary Friends wherever you get your podcasts and check out the video episodes on YouTube. Please leave a rating and review to help support the show.